Hi, this is Mike Fry.
And this is Beth Nelson.
And you are listening to Animal Wise Radio. We've got a really amazing show coming
up. I know, I'm all a Twitter.
I'm most excited. Beth is going to talk about eco islands.
I want to live on an island. I also am a lover of the desert and desert habitats. I'm so thrilled. We're going to have Dr. David Yetman, who is the host of a public television show called The Desert Speaks, and we'll be talking all things desert. We won't have enough time.
We'll also be talking with Camilla Fox. She's the founding director of Project Coyote. We're going to talk about coexisting with America's wild song dog.
It's going to be a good show.
I think I coexist with one already. I'm excited to get into this next couple of segments because we're being joined by Camilla Fox.
She is not only the founding director of an organization called Project Coyote, but she also is a consultant with the Animal Welfare Institute. And she's doing a lot of work to try and educate folks on the habits, the ecology of what she calls the wild dog, the America's wild dog.
And wild song dog.
Song dog. Yeah. Yes. And just how we can perhaps think differently about coexisting with these animals.
The coyote is an amazing animal. You know, there's a lot more to it than you'd see on a Roadrunner cartoon.
Perhaps. And so Camilla's going to be here to set us straight. So welcome to Animal Wise Radio, Camilla.
Thank you. Wonderful to be with you.
My assessment from, you know, superficially talking to people out there about coyotes is I think, unfortunately, a lot of times people get their ideas about coyotes from popular culture like Roadrunner or Little Red Riding Hood or whatever, and they have all kinds of false misconceptions about them.
Absolutely, and unfortunately, there's a great amount of fear, and I think there are many reasons why, you know, we have fear of predators. We're biologically also an animal species, and so I think there's a natural, visceral fear of things larger than us that could potentially threaten us. I also think when you look at, just as you mentioned, Little Red Riding Hood and some of the stories that we were brought up on, you know, we have been ensconced in this sort of paradigm that views predators as a threat. And then also I think sometimes the media, you know, can be sometimes not our friend in terms of educating people about whether coyotes or wolves or other predators and the important role that they play in our lives.
Well, and I think a lot of times they hype we want people to be afraid. I think we want drama in the stories that we tell, and so we amplify anything that might be scary to beyond what's rational. I mean, I think when people think about the size of a coyote, I think most people are shocked to find out that, yeah, I mean, like, I think an adult male is typically like 45 pounds.
So
I mean,
lifting
not huge.
An anvil and dropping it off a cliff is not such a likely scenario. Camilla, talk to us a little bit about what drew your interest to this particular animal.
Well, part of it is I grew up actually with a father who studied wild canids. So I had wild canids all around me at different times of my life and just came to greatly appreciate the canid world, including domestic dogs. So I've always had a fascination with coyotes and wolves and foxes. And then I previously worked for the Animal Protection Institute in California, different from the Animal Welfare Institute. But in my work there, I ran the wildlife department and started to work on human-carnivore conflicts, both in agricultural areas and urban areas. And I saw this tremendous void in terms of really sort of filling this area of education around, in particular, coyotes. And, of course, we have coyotes now in every U.S. state in the lower 48. And there's a tremendous need for education, for outreach, for working with municipalities and counties that are sort of struggling with this animal in terms of that fear-mongering and that how do we coexist question. So essentially, I saw this need and we're trying to fill that.
You know, I think it's interesting when I look at different municipalities. In fact, I was out at your website this morning, kind of looking at some of the issues going on and comparing it to what's going on here in Minnesota. It seems like there's a broad range of response to coyotes, you know, becoming more common in our cities. You know, in one city, they may be trying to round up and exterminate them, while here in Minnesota, animal control officially has a hands-off policy where they're just putting educational material out saying, hey, folks, coyotes are here to stay. They're not leaving. Learn to live with them. And so I'm guessing, you know, it's kind of, there's not a one-size-fits-all approach to how do you deal with the cities.
Absolutely, and I think you nailed it there, that that it really can vary tremendously from city to city. And we have an example that we're dealing with now in Colorado, where we have one city, city of Centennial, and it abuts another town called Greenwood. And Centennial has taken a very progressive approach to coyote management coexistence, and they've involved a whole stakeholders group to develop a very proactive management plan that emphasizes public education over the long term. And just next door, the Greenwood Village is actually taking a much more short-term Band-Aid approach of lethal removal.
Well, it's going to be
looking at the long term.
Looking at some of the things that we can do to peacefully coexist, and what are some of the real solutions to, you know, some of the potential issues in cohabitating with them, will be part of the discussion. I also want to talk about some issues going on in Florida relating to different ways of hunting coyote and things. Our guest is Camilla Fox. We'll be back with more of the discussion right after this. We're talking about all things related to what is often called America's wild song dog, amazing canids, the coyote.
It states right out on your website that you're trying to promote a coexistence between people and coyotes by championing progressive management policies. We left at the break where you were talking about how in Colorado, I believe it was, there are two communities side by side, one choosing to take one approach to managing coexistence with the coyotes and the other taking another approach. I would like you to try and flesh that story out a little bit more for us, so we know more how that evolved or what's involved with the problems there.
Sure. Well, looking at Centennial, which is the one that has decided to take a very proactive and progressive approach to cohabitating with coyotes, I think when you look at the management and the city council, they recognize that, you know, coyotes are here to stay. And one of our mantras is love them or hate them, they are here to stay. And we know that from history, that they're a very biologically adaptable and resilient species. And so we have to learn how to coexist. And Centennial, essentially what they did was they established a wide stakeholders group that included counties from surrounding areas, and they looked at the big picture of how do we coexist with this animal over the long term? What kind of educational things do we need to have in place to coexist? And so out of that process, that was a very progressive and democratic process, they developed a very proactive management plan that emphasizes public education and outreach, because so much of this is actually teaching people about how to reduce negative encounters with coyotes. And so that's what Centennial did. And then next door, Greenwood Village took a very different approach, and it's not just a took, it's a current take. They're involved in essentially carrying out lethal coyote control of populations. And what we know through scientific research is that this is simply a Band-Aid approach, because this species will essentially fill in any territorial void. Nature abhors a vacuum, particularly when it comes to predators. And so when you remove coyotes from a given area, they will quickly refill those empty territorial niches.
They'll just make more.
They will fill in, and yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so it's a short-term approach. Sometimes the reason why communities take this approach is because it does appease a certain segment of the population. It's an easy approach. They can say they're doing something. But the problem is it's not a long-term approach, and, you know, coyotes will soon be back, and they'll just have to continue the killing cycle.
Well, and the thing is it seems, you know, practically impossible for them to even, let's just say, pretend, for example, I'm going to take, like, the worst-case scenario, the worst possible coyote encounter that you do hear about, or, you know, people will leave their small pets outside, unattended, unsupervised, and a coyote may take it and kill it. Obviously a horrible situation, a bad thing. The solution to that is to go out and kill coyotes, I will guarantee you they're not going to be able to kill them all, and it's still not going to mean that it's safe to leave your chihuahua outside unattended.
Absolutely, and that's one of the messages is, you know, we do live in landscapes where there are wild predators, and I live in Northern California in an urban area, and even in this area we have other larger carnivores, including mountain lions and black bears in northern parts of California. So we have these animals, and we do have to learn how to decrease negative encounters. And most often with coyotes, they are, when we have negative conflicts, often there are pets involved, our dogs and cats. And so part of the learning curve and part of the education process is to show people that there are ways that we can mitigate these encounters. For example, when recreating in open space areas, there are certain times of the year when we see an increase in negative encounters with coyotes, and particularly around pupping season. So this is from about April to August, when coyote parents are raising their pups. And at this time, they may be more territorial. They may be a bit more defensive of their den sites, trying to protect their young. And so, you know, during these times, we recommend that people walk their dogs on leashes, that they avoid areas that could be potentially den sites. And so little things like this can actually go a long way in terms of reducing those negative encounters.
Well, one of the other negative encounters is that there are folks that are ranchers who might say that they're losing livestock. Is that not correct?
Yes, that's certainly been a problem.
And so I know that from, you know, reading about these issues for some years now, there are different approaches that folks can take with respect to their herds. And I'm wondering what you have seen as more successful measures and what you're seeing as some of the maybe most bad practices.
But before we go there, there's an in-between question that I want to ask before, because I strongly believe, and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong about this, Camilla, but I suspect that a large portion of the deaths, supposedly, of livestock as a result of coyote are falsely reported. They're, you know, the coyotes might be blamed for the death of an animal, but that doesn't mean it was killed. If you see a coyote feeding on a carcass, doesn't mean the coyote killed it. And I think there's lots of reasons people will jump to false conclusions about the impact that those animals are actually having.
Yes, and that's a very, very good point. We do know that happens, false reporting. And we also know that, you know, predators do kill livestock. So, you know, there's a bit of truth to both. And what we do know, though, looking historically at the way that we've been managing coyotes and predators in general, is that the traditional management simply doesn't work. Our federal government has been exterminating or trying to exterminate coyotes for over a century. They've shifted their way of describing their approach. They used to use the term extermination, and in fact, in 1934, our federal government's Predator Control Division actually stated that one of their goals was to eradicate coyotes in North America. Again, that was
how's that worked
30s.
Out for them?
Yes, and we know that obviously hasn't worked. Coyotes have expanded their range partially in response to the eradication of larger competitor species such as gray wolves in many parts of North America, so they have refilled those niches. Mm-hmm. But we know that the way that coyote control and predator management has been conducted through snaring, poisoning, aerial gunning for over the last century hasn't worked in when you look at coyotes in terms of reducing their populations and often in terms of reducing conflicts with livestock. So, you know, when you look at the scientific research, we can say the coyote control methods with these indiscriminate methods does not work in terms of reducing populations or in reducing conflicts over the long term. So we need to look at different approaches, and there are areas that are looking at alternative ways. For instance, here in my home community of Marin County, which is Northern California, just north of San Francisco, our county decided to go with a very different program that essentially, instead of killing native carnivores, which is the traditional approach taken in Western North America, we have it's called the Marin County Strategic Plan for Livestock and Wildlife Protection. And what it does is it takes the money that normally went to pay a federal trapper to kill coyotes and bobcats and foxes and other predators, and instead uses that money to assist ranchers with implementing better animal husbandry techniques and predator deterrents, such as livestock guard animals, including guard dogs, llamas, donkeys, use of better fencing, the installation of lambing sheds. So it's an alternative approach that, instead of killing the carnivores, which just becomes a sort of cyclical process and keeps the federal government in business, instead it takes a long-term approach and, through a cost-share program, assists these ranchers with implementing methods that really have a much more long-term, long-lasting effect.
Well, I think there are plenty of donkeys that need work these days, so I'm all for that. I need to take us in another direction, because one of the issues that you're really working on is a practice called penning. And can you tell us a little bit about what that is and where this practice has been in place?
And unfortunately, perhaps, we just have a few minutes left, so
perhaps why?
Yeah, just quickly. So penning essentially is a practice of live trapping coyotes and foxes in the wild, and then these wild canids are shipped and traded, often across state lines, and they're sold to facilities that operate penning facilities. And these penning facilities, what their goal is to train their hunting dogs on these wild foxes and coyotes, essentially pitting domestic canines against wild canines. And unfortunately, what often happens is the wild coyote or fox is literally torn apart alive. And these are, you know, packs of hounds that are pitted against this animal. And this is legal in many states throughout the Southeast and Midwest, despite the fact that the Midwest Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies in 2008 passed a resolution encouraging states to prohibit this practice. And there are many, many, many concerns about this practice. I mean, obviously, it's very unethical and inhumane, but there are also ecological concerns with disease transmission with these wild canids. And
you just have to wonder about the mental state of somebody who would be willing to engage in that kind of activity. I mean, it's just horrific. I mean,
it is, and it's you know, we have as a nation decided that dog fighting and cock fighting are not acceptable, and we have finally banned those practices. And this is, you know, this is very similar in terms of the mindset behind somehow getting some thrill and entertainment, if you will, watching these domestic dogs just literally rip up wild foxes and coyotes.
I was actually out looking on your website earlier this morning and went to a news report about that was going on in Florida, where someone was a penning operation was shut down for some illegal activity. And one of the people who was commenting on the story was commenting in support of the penning operation, basically saying, there's nothing wrong with these activities. It's nothing different than what you would find. You know, it's no more cruel or inhumane than what you would find just in the wild. And all I could think is, you know,
But okay, it's not
okay.
In the wild.
Well, right, okay. A, where in the wild do you find a pen where you're going to stick an animal? And where in the world are you going to find trained dogs who are going to go rip it apart? And number two, if that were natural in the wild, how would you like it to happen to any of the people or animals that you know? How would you like it if somebody did it to your trained dogs or your companion dogs? That's not a natural, wild activity. And the people who engage in that and think about doing that, I think...
You're not fans of them.
No.
But we are fans of the work you're trying to do, Camilla. I think that the whole education piece and trying to help people understand maybe the benefits of living alongside wildlife and the reasons we should perhaps let go of some of our longstanding fears, that's a very important piece. And hopefully in building that part of the story around the coyote, we can see less and less of this other activity.
And people can get more information on your website. Also, I just say, we can have our wildlife and we can learn to coexist with it. We don't have to leave our pets and our livestock completely vulnerable. We can cohabitate. Can give a quick plug out for your website and then...
Okay, it's just on the penning issue too, we have a lot of information on our homepage and on our website because there are active issues right now with this particular practice in both Florida and Indiana. And Florida did temporarily suspend penning in February because of these concerns. So we're thrilled with some progress on this.
Great.
And our plug for our website, it's projectcoyote.org. And also the Animal Welfare Institute's is awionline.org.
Well, thanks, Camilla. It's been great.